Thank you, Nadine. You notice very quickly, I did change the title from what it was originally. Originally, it was just going to be on zeolites. I still include discussion on zeolites. I made it a little bit more broad. I figured it would be more informative to this audience that probably has not been exposed very much to titration calorimetry. So I hope that doesn't disappoint anybody. Okay, with modern calorimeters, they're extremely sensitive. We're able to very precisely measure heats of reaction. How sensitive are they? For example, in a reaction cell, I can titrate water, a drop of water into water at the same temperature, and easily measure a heat response. I can measure ITC, an isothermal titration calorimeter, you can actually measure the evaporation of water from some of these reaction cells. Very, very sensitive. The heat from microorganism growth is almost off the charts for some of these. And in general, the heat response, as you can see in the equation, the heat response is a function of the enthalpy of the reaction and also the moles of the product reaction. So essentially, this being able to measure this heat at such a sensitive level provides us with a very sensitive indicator of the degree to which a reaction occurs and also potential changes in the type of reaction that's occurring. And we can use this type of instrumentation for studying pure mineral systems, which is much more simple. More challenging is the mixed minerals soils or mixed mineral systems or natural soils. In the 80s, the geochemists mostly had done a decent amount of work on pure mineral systems using calorimetry, titration calorimetry as one of them. About 10 years ago, Dr. Kavenji and Dr. Rue actually started using a flow-through calorimeter, started doing some of this work on mixed mineral systems using natural soils. So I'd like to give some examples of some applications that I've used isothermal titration calorimetry for, ITC. All right, here's an example of a study where we were looking at the adsorption of phosphorus onto kaolinite, pure kaolinite system. We were titrating 0.1 molar phosphorus into 100 milligrams of kaolinite. You can see the heat response on the y-axis. We have a laser pointer. Oh, that's right. The mouse, okay, all right, very good. The heat response on the y-axis, time on the x-axis, 25 titrations of 0.01 milliliters. Each one of those peaks represents one of the titrations. And for each titration point, you can see initially there's a fast exothermic reaction followed by a slower endothermic reaction. All right. Well, with further benchtop work and other ITC experiments on pure solutions, we found that the initial fast exothermic reaction is ligand exchange of phosphorus onto the surface of the kaolinite, and to some extent, a little bit of kaolinite dissolution and protonation of those terminal hydroxide groups. And that slower endothermic follow-up reaction indicated aluminum phosphate precipitation. And further ITC experiments with pure solutions and also just regular old-fashioned standard state calculations of enthalpy, we found that aluminum and iron phosphate precipitation in solution is endothermic, calcium phosphate precipitation exothermic, and acid-base neutralization and carbonate dissolution tends to be exothermic. This kind of gave us a little bit of a guide before we started looking at applying this to real soil. So pure mineral system kaolinite, not too much of a problem. We wanted to then test this out, repeat the experiments on real soils. 28 benchmark Oklahoma soils that were well characterized for pH, malic 3, extractable phosphorus, calcium, aluminum, iron, exchangeable aluminum, single point phosphorus adsorption, and ammonium oxalate, extractable phosphorus, aluminum, iron. Again, repeat the same experiment. 25 titrations of 0.01 molar sodium phosphate into 100 milligrams of soil, 0.01 mils per titration, 5 minutes allowed between each titration. And what we found was that the amount of phosphorus sorbed from that single point isotherm was statistically related to the aluminum in the soil as extracted by ammonium oxalate, and also the heat from the first titration. And statistically, the heat of the first titration and of all cumulative 25 titrations was mostly a function of the amount of calcium in the soil, which made sense. We had seen earlier that calcium phosphate precipitation was very exothermic, but also so is the dissolution of calcium carbonate. They're both exothermic, which was a problem. We couldn't really separate the two and say with this exothermic signal and say, well, how much is from precipitation, especially considering that oftentimes the precursor to the calcium phosphate precipitation is the dissolution of calcium carbonate. So that is impossible for us to distinguish, but we were able to separate the soils into three groups based on their endotherms: high, medium, and low to none. And those groups were statistically different from each other in regard to exchangeable aluminum, pH, and calcium. The soils that displayed the highest endotherms had the highest amount of exchangeable aluminum, lowest pH, and lowest calcium, which made sense because based on what we had learned from the pure mineral studies, and you would expect under these conditions, it suggested aluminum and iron phosphate precipitation. And likewise, opposite, those that displayed the greatest exotherms and very little endotherms had the least amount of exchangeable aluminum statistically, and the highest pH and the highest amount of calcium. Again, made sense with what we had seen earlier, suggesting calcium phosphate precipitation. However, again, we can't separate out that acid-base neutralization and calcium carbonate dissolution from that. Now, from this study, what essentially we're able to use the ITC as it was a qualitative tool for looking at phosphorus sorption mechanisms. Definitely not quantitative. It was qualitative, but it can be useful nonetheless. Another potential application of ITC that we've done is in the context of flow-through systems of removing phosphorus from a passing solution. I do a lot of work with industrial byproducts and using them to remove phosphorus from runoff as it's passing through the landscape and building large landscape filters. Concept's very simple. You know, you have a structure containing a phosphorus sorption material, usually industrial byproduct. You pass water through it. It phosphorus and it sorbs to the material. It's contained in it. You have the low phosphorus treated water coming out. Here's a picture of one that's actually constructed. This is one in Stillwater. It's built on a golf course, and the water is filtered through this bed of phosphorus-sorbing materials, and treated water comes out downstream. One of the materials that has been used in construction of these filters is a byproduct, gypsum product, from the power industry. And as you can imagine, this type of system, kinetics is very important because the water has a very limited amount of time that it's in contact with that bed of materials as it passes through it. So we wanted to see, could ITC provide us with any useful information on this at all? So what you see here is the results of a single shot titration, one shot of titration into this byproduct gypsum. And what you see initially is we have this endotherm, which is the formation of the solution species HSO4-. And if you remember what I mentioned earlier, calcium phosphate precipitation, exothermic, we reach our exothermic peak from that precipitation at 3.8 minutes after titration. That's how long it took to reach the peak in the heat production from that reaction. Okay, well, how is that useful to us, 3.8 minutes? Well, when we look at the flow-through studies in the laboratory of passing phosphorus solution through this bed of materials, gypsum, at different retention times, here we see plotted out the normalized for the amount of phosphorus added to it on the x-axis and the amount of phosphorus adsorbed on the y-axis at different retention times for the flow-through system. 10-minute retention time, 8, 6, 3, and 0.5. Essentially, that's the amount of time that the solution is in contact with material as it passes through it. And what you can see is that for retention times that are greater than 3.8 minutes, we tend to have, they tend to be clustered together. If you allow at least 3.8 minutes for that reaction to occur, the reaction occurs fully. I'm sorry. But for the retention times less than 3.8 minutes, 3 minutes, 0.5 minutes, you can see that it drops off. down below. Less than 3.8 minutes, we weren't able to allow enough time for the reaction to occur. So in this case, the ITC helped provide us with an indicator of the optimum retention time for the system. We did similar work with the zeolites. Here we have a potassium-saturated zeolite in which we titrated with ammonium to look at ammonium-potassium exchange. And you see the reaction, the exchange reaction is very endothermic, and it reaches its peak at 100 seconds after the titration, and then it slowly decreases over the next 50 minutes. And this is attributed to slow diffusion of ammonium within the interior of the zeolite. And again, we apply this to the context of a flow-through system. A ammonium-rich solution passing through a bed of zeolites with a limited amount of time to be in contact with it. Here we see when the retention time greater than 100 seconds, shown here 170 seconds, 330 seconds, 330 seconds, we're able to maximize the ammonium removal from the system. As long as we keep that retention time greater than 100 seconds. Less than 100 seconds, at 30 seconds, 70 seconds, you can see it falls off. So again, with ITC, we're able to determine our optimum retention time for this system. So to conclude, ITC, it is a very sensitive indicator of reactions. However, you need to know something about your system. It's not a standalone tool. You can titrate any solution with any solid, and you're going to get a heat response. It's so sensitive, it's going to measure anything. The problem is, what is it that you're measuring? You need to understand your system, and you need to be able to try and isolate those reactions that you're measuring. That's why it's very difficult to use for natural soils. And again, a lot of potential interferences. In my opinion, there's a lot of potential for using this tool and obtaining thermodynamic constants for soils, Gibbs for energy, enthalpy, entropy, a lot of potential for that. But in my opinion, this is mostly feasible for pure mineral systems. Now, I personally have not done this because I tend to work more on the applied side, so I use it more as an indicator, as a tool, not to determine thermodynamic constants. But some of the geochemists have done this in the 80s with pure mineral systems. I think there's a lot of potential for that. Thank you for your time.
We have a couple of minutes for questions.
Yes, sir.
Yes, on the ammonium on zeolite experiment, don't you have to include the size of zeolite diffusion times to put this ammonium into the zeolite?
I'm sorry, yeah. Include the...
I'm talking about the class mass transfer limitation of this ammonium ion gets get into the zeolite particles, and you treat it if there is no diffusion of resistance of this.
Reaction time. We just considered this was a physical parameter of the flow through cell itself. We set it up to take either 30 seconds, 70 seconds time for the solution for one pore volume to pass through. We didn't separate out for diffusion or not. But with those low retention times that we had in there, I think the highest one we had was 330 seconds. Not enough time for the diffusion to take place. Based on this, and also based on other research, most people show it takes at least 5 minutes for the diffusion to take place into the interior. It goes on for hours, actually.
What size particle were you using?
I can't remember. It was fairly large. It's fairly large. It was a commercially available zeolite. It was sand size or greater, which was optimal. Again, the context of this was for removing ammonium from swine effluent for systems potentially built on a farm on a dynamic exchange where we could remove that ammonium later on. So we wanted something with a very high hydraulic conductivity. So large particles was good.
I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
If you use it for only titrating once, can you recover your solid and then maybe getting a total
yes.
Enthalpy, not standard state, kilojoule per mole, if you
Yes.
Analyze,
yeah, that's a good point. We could recover the solid afterwards and measure exactly how much absorbed on it and calculate in some of the standard state thermodynamic. Yes.
Okay.